So let me introduce you to the department. We are one of the largest politics or political science departments in Britain. In fact, we're one of the largest in the world. We have almost 50 full-time faculty in the department. Political science as a discipline is spread between several departments at the LSE, Department of Government, Department of International Relations, and then a few other people dotting around in other departments that are seen together as a group. We are the largest group of political scientists, right, about 100 of us in Europe, and I think only Harvard, you can argue, has a larger community of political scientists than we do. Why are we called the Department of Government? Most other departments in the UK are called politics or politics and international studies. I've been on the faculty here for about 17 years, and every 4 or 5 years it comes up as a departmental meeting. Shouldn't we change our name to political science or politics or something? And then it just takes someone else to point out, well, the department at Harvard is called the Department of Government. So we're in good company by calling ourselves the Department of Government. We're also one of the oldest departments in the UK. The LSE is the London School of Economics and Political Science, and so science as a discipline in the UK, you can argue, was founded here at the LSE, and the Department of Government is the main department that does that. We're a very cosmopolitan mix of staff and students from all over the world, on the faculty and the student body. We've got lots of academic visitors and research scholars every year. We have a large community of PhD students from all over the world, and every week, lots of public events and public speakers. We run a program the last few years for the British government at LSE, where we've organised major events. Boris Johnson, Nigel Farage, and various other people who've come over the last few weeks to come and speak to the department, or to the school in general. We currently have 4 undergraduate degrees: straight government, government economics, government history, politics and philosophy, which is in fact the same as government and philosophy. And then we've got a couple of new degrees we're going to be launching year after next. If you're thinking of taking a year out, we've got Politics and International Relations is going to be launched, and a new 4-year PPE degree for Philosophy, Politics and Economics. But as from next year, we've got these 3-year undergraduate degrees. BSc Government, well, for all our undergraduate degrees, in the first year you have to do 2 compulsory government department options. If you don't do one of them in the first year, you have to do it in the second year. One is GB100, which is Introduction to Political Thought, and Introduction to Political Theory, it's called, and GB101 is Introduction to Political Science. So I teach Introduction to Political Science. I have all the lectures, 20 of them over the year. 180 students take the course, and I teach it as a sort of global comparative politics course. Everything you would ever want to know about political science, political behaviour, voting, elections, political institutions, and political outcomes. In the political theory course, it's, I guess we think of it as Plato to NATO. So everything, the main big political thinkers from Plato to NATO, and taught by my colleague, the deputy head for teaching department, Chandran Kukathas, who's a very big, well-known political philosopher. So with those foundations, you then go on and take various options in the second year around different thematic areas of the department, both politics, public policy, European politics, other specialisms in political theory, and then in the final year, when they're gradually building up a whole wide range of specialist option courses where you're actually in a classroom with a faculty member for the duration of those courses in sort of more specialist areas, environmental politics or whatever. On the BSc Government, because it's a straight LSE, you do have some outside options in the first year, outside options in the second year and so on, and you can also take languages if you want to. The joint honours degree is a little bit more restricted because there's compulsory units in each of the joint honours degrees. Government and economics is really a genuine economics degree as well as a genuine politics degree. There's no sort of light-touch economics or light-touch politics. You have to do both. You do all the core elements of economics, micro, macro, econometrics, and all the core elements of political science as part of the degree. economics at the LSE is pretty quantitative. Students on this degree all have very top grades at maths A level. A lot of them have two maths A levels. I can get back and talk to you about that. But this is one of the highest applicants at the base of our undergraduate degrees. It's one of the LSE's flagship degrees. We are the London School of Economics and Political Science, after all. So, and this is the degree that we really, up to now, have gone toe to toe with a degree at some other place in the country, either one mentioned. PPE in Oxford. Governance and History, again, a joint honours degree with us in the History Department, more of an emphasis on political history and the historical politics. You get to do the political ideas of political theory in government, comparative institutions in government, and then in history, mostly it's contemporary history in the History Department, which is everything post 1648. And an option in economic history. We have a separate economic history department at LSE and some really top scholars in economic history, which fits nicely into some of the topics we cover in government. Politics and Philosophy is a joint degree between our department of government and the philosophy department here at the LSE. Again, combination of our core elements and their core elements in philosophy, for example, and logic. And we have a very close working relationship between our political theory group in our department and the philosophy department. Yes. The structure of these degrees is all the same. They're 3-year degrees. Each degree, you have four year-long courses in each year. So that's 12 year-long courses. Teaching is a lecture every week and a class every week. They vary a little bit in length. The lectures can be anything from 1 to 2 hours. Classes can be anything from 1 to 2 hours, depending on the course, depending on the level of the course, and so on. You normally have 4 pieces of assignment over the year. They could be essays, or they could be some sort of project, or they can be a problem set if it's in economics, or problem set in some of our courses in government. They're non-assessed for most courses, except when you get more advanced for the third year, but for most courses in the first and second year, it's all done with final assessment in the summer term. And that's, I guess, all you need to know. Now, when it comes to calculating your final degree grade, it's your exam marks in the second year and the third year plus an average of your exam marks in the first year. So the first year, we might accept that you might not perform as well as you might perhaps have hoped, and so it's weighted more on your performance in your second year. Each student is allocated an academic advisor in the department. Each faculty member has around 15 undergraduate advisees across the different years. And you meet your academic advisor at least twice a term. The academic advisor is there for 2 roles. One, to advise on your academics, so helping with your course choices, talking to you about essays, helping you think about who else in the department you might want to go talk to if you're writing an essay on a subject, or doing a project on a subject, or if you're later on in your degree doing a dissertation, you've chosen to do a 10,000-word dissertation in the final year, they can help you identify colleagues in the department and elsewhere in the school you want to talk to for your dissertation. So one of the roles is an academic advisory role. The second role is more of a point of contact in the school if you ever have any problems, housing, personal, family, financial, whatever. And it's a first point of contact for you to come to, and then they can put you in touch with all the various other people and experts we have around the LSE who can help with financial issues or housing issues or personal well-being issues from the health centre. The latest data we have is from 2011-12. We're putting together the data on our graduates from last year in 2012-13. We should have that finished soon, but the latest complete data set we have is from 2011-12, and we have 94% of government graduates are in employment, or have taken time out or in further study 6 months after graduation. Wide range of employment sectors, regional and national governments and international governments, media and publishing, NGOs, the not-for-profit world, development, consultancy, banking, accounting, internet entrepreneurs, a former student of mine making lots of money as an internet entrepreneur. further study at master's level or PhD level, working for politicians and so on and so on. Average salary of that cohort 6 months after graduation, so this was the average salary for the beginning of 2013 of our graduates, of the ones who were employment, was 28,600, so a starting salary more or less equivalent to the starting salary of our academics. Department holds lots and lots of social events for students and faculty. You get to meet faculty in these events and other graduate students, students in other departments. One of the most fun activities of the year is the departmental weekend away in Cumberland Lodge. Cumberland Lodge is an educational charity owned by the royal family, based in Windsor Great Park, and it is for residential weekend conferences for the University of London. And so each college of the University of London has allocated a certain number of weekends. Within LSE, each department is given a weekend. And so we organise a conference over the weekend for students to go and spend the weekend in the Windsor Great Park and to hang out with faculty from LSE and from everywhere else. So the theme of the conference this year is ethnic conflict in societies across the world, and we have some of the world's experts on this subject coming and talking about it. So obviously very salient given what's been happening in the Ukraine. Lots and lots of student societies. We have a lot of interaction with the various politically related societies, not just the party societies, but the debating societies. But we involve the LSE Students' Union and the Society of Students' Union in our activities, like our British Government and LSE programme. And students, when we have a big speaker come in, like Boris Johnson, he has a speech and then we have dinner for him, we invite some of our undergraduates from these politics studies to come and have dinner with these outside speakers. So you sit around the table, about 10 of you, and you sit there and you have a chat with Boris Johnson, or Nigel Farage, or Nick Clegg, or whoever it is we have that week. Under the administrative office of the government department is CON 318 for any of your queries. We have regularly, every term, we have a meeting of the faculty, student, staff, student liaison committee, where each program has two representatives on this committee, and we discuss and meet with the students to talk about issues of that might have arisen over the term, or to address how things could be made better in terms of, for example, feedback on essays or something like that. So we have a lot of interaction between faculty and students to improve what we do, and we have a dedicated team of administrators for the undergraduate program who are there every day in the administrative office.
That's about it. Any questions? Did you ask anything about LSE?
My opinion on one, about the department, about what it's like to study here. Yeah.
For the kind of the joint honours courses, how many kind of other modules can you take? In terms of flexibility in the second period?
It depends on the degree programme. The regulations are online on the LSE website, so you can look at those in detail. But normally means you have two. For government economics, I think you only have one outside option because it's a bit restricted. But for politics and philosophy and government history, I think you have two outside options over the 3 years. You have one for sure in the first year, and then you have one later on. Yeah.
For the new politics and international relations degree, do you know how many people are going to be on that course?
Four, I think 30 is the first year.
How far can you tailor them? So, for example, if I was interested in political theory and political philosophy, you know, how far will it call the government degree? If I wanted to study more political philosophy and political theory,
sure.
How often do you do that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so we have. The department itself is organised into more or less four broad groups. We have one of the groups of the department is called Political Science and Political Economy. And this is a group of scholars who largely use quantitative methods for studying advanced industrial democracies across the world, so elections, voting institutions, and so on. I'm an expert on European politics, and so I'm in that group. The next biggest group is the political theory group in the department. And political theory is political philosophy, history of political thought, and they have a lot of links, as I said, with the philosophy department. The next group, the third largest group, is the comparative politics group, that largely is scholars who study the developing world, different parts of the developing world, Asia, Africa, Latin America, and so on. And the fourth group is public policy. And we have a smaller group of scholars who do public policy, public administration. So within that, what that means is that when you think, the reason I said that is, when you think about what kind of courses do we put on, it means that about 30% of all the courses that we put on for our undergraduates are in the area of political theory. Right? So you have one compulsory first year course, but then as you go through, you'll see that about 30% of the course options that you can take and choose and put together are political theory. So you can pretty much, and we have students in the past, we pretty much have done GB1 in political science, and then GB100 in political theory, and then they've tailored the rest of their courses to do a lot more political theory, political philosophy type options, and also perhaps an outside option of philosophy. And the same applies to people who are more interested in this economy or economics, or people who are interested more in public policy, or people who are interested in the developing world. So you can take very much around the type of options you've got and the outside options you've got. So, for example, a lot of our students take outside options in international relations, foreign international relations students take outside options in our department. And you'll realise when you're taking your courses here, you'll be with a lot of students from other departments at LSC. So from economics, from history, from anthropology, accounting and finance. Well, we don't talk today.
Do you have any idea what the entry requirements will be for the new international relations and politics?
It'll be the same. It's the same. It's a 3A's requirement, which is the same as the requirement is for our current undergraduate degrees and departments.
Are LSE graduates given priority over graduates from other universities if they apply for a master's course here?
We take the best students who apply. I mean, if it's an LSE student and the LSE students go first, then there's a kind of 90% probability they're getting an offer. But it's the same as if, let's say, it's a student applying from Oxford who's going first, or a student applying from another top university, or a student applying from a top US university with like a 3.8 GPA. So, you know, we're looking for top students and the equivalent grades from the LSE or from an equivalent department or program that we think is equivalent in quality to ours, we treat equally. So in a sense, what the advantage that you have if you're applying to a master's degree is we're looking for students who really have truly outstanding grades if we think they're coming from a program where we're not convinced that what they've done in that program is of the same calibre that we have. So let's say you will be coming from, say, a second-tier US university, and you've done politics, political science, the major, and you're applying. We'd expect slightly higher grades. So that's the trade-off. Yeah.
Is there a large MU1 community at the school, and are there any notably big conferences that they go to every year?
Large, sorry?
MU1,
Modern
United Nations.
I have no idea. So I suggest no. But it may well be. I honestly don't know. In social relations department, you might know that more. Yeah.
Is there any specific subjects, like any of the subjects that you would be in?
I mean, for economics, government economics, we require maths, A level. So that's an A in the maths A level. But for the others, no. I mean, and we're not like Cambridge in that we say, you know, we only accept at these sort of A levels. In general, what we're looking for are students who are quite eclectic. So we don't want people who are just all straight science, although that's not bad, and we have people coming in with straight sciences, or people who are all straight arts and humanities, although we do have people, very top students, coming in with straight arts and humanities. But, you know, the standard social scientist coming into the LSE is somebody who's got history, maths, perhaps a language, or, you know, it's kind of a broad range of subjects. The modern social sciences is both qualitative and quantitative, and increasingly so on the quantitative side. So somebody who's willing to say, okay, I may not have fantastic math skills, but I'm willing to kind of upgrade them as part of the programme, or people who say, I've got a maths A level and I'm ready to be a social scientist. So, yeah.
There's a joint degree of government and economics. How many, how much percentage you will be focusing on each of the degree? How many percentage you will be focusing on each of the degree? For example, like government economics will be 50-50?
Yes, 50-50. It's absolutely 50-50. I mean, you can, through your options, you can take, I think, one more course either in economics or one more course either in government. So you can end up across the 12 courses, you can end up with, say, 6, 5 and an outside option. And that 6 could be in government or economics. And so, but it's really technically joint degree. So it's not that you've gone, it's not that you've just done one economics course in the first year and dropped it. Oxford lets you do PPE and do one course in economics and have the word economics after your name. The LSE Economics Department refuses to allow anybody to come out of the LSE without with the word economics in their degree title unless they've done the core minimum core in economics. So they can say you're an economist. So and if they play that game, we just play the same. So we say you're not around the LSE and call yourself a political scientist unless you've actually done what we think of as the core elements of the politics degree. Yeah.
Does this course or the new international relations and politics course will entail a year of war?
No. You can actually do a period of abroad as part of your degree, suspend part of the degree, and you can go away. As part of that, we have exchange programs with several other universities. We've got LSE has certain universities that are our privileged partners. We have Columbia, NYU, Peking, Beijing University, National University of Singapore, Cape Town, Hertie School of Governance, that's graduate. I think that's all. Yeah.
Do you prefer students to have A-level government
and politics? No. It doesn't matter. I mean, you can have it. It doesn't do you any harm, but it's not expected at all. And it actually doesn't, our evidence suggests it doesn't make a big difference over how well you perform. I mean, some students come into GV 101 and they look at the curriculum and say, oh, I did some of this in my A-level. And after 2 weeks, they realise, no, this isn't good.
So I'm interested in doing government and history, for example. As I already mentioned, I asked you...
You're interested in government and history and doing all the political theory stuff.
Yeah, so exactly. So if you were going to go, you know, apply for government and history, you're trying to show your interest in government, but I'm more interested in political theory.
I wouldn't worry about it. Look, if you get into our programs and you take... You know, you can move between programs once you get here. It's hard to move between programs between departments. Because departments will then say, well, they didn't apply to our program, they applied to your program. But within our department, and it does happen, but within our department, you know, let's say you started on government and history and you decide actually straight government or politics or philosophy is better for you, that's a transition you can make at the end of the first year. So we have students who start on government economics and they find that the economics is a bit too tough, would they do straight government? Or students who do government economics and find the government is too tough and they do straight economics. So you know, we get a lot of movement around, and there's flexibility. Yeah?
What kind of things are you studying within the unit you described as European for?
Well, we have two undergraduate courses on European politics. One on comparative, it's called Politics and Institutions in Europe, and then we look at parties, elections, political reform, political economy. The first term a thematic and the second term a case studies where you go country by country. And the other course is Government and Politics of the European Union, and we look at the process of European integration and decision making in the EU and the whole debate about democratic deficit, public opinion and so on. Yep.
Would a foundation here increase the chances of successful applications?
I don't know that, actually. That's a question worth asking the LSE Admissions Office. I'm not sure about that, I'm afraid.
What would you say places the government department at LSE above, say, the politics department at UCL or somewhere else?
We were ranked in the Times Higher rankings last year as the second top department in the world in politics, after Harvard. And why they beat us, I don't know. UCL is a very good up-and-coming department. The way to think about it, if you look at, you know, I've been involved in, as being head of the department, you get involved in a lot of interdepartmental stuff. I've been on the executive for the American Political Science Association, I'm on editorial boards of lots of journals, I'm a fellow of the British Academy in the politics section, so you get to know all the other colleagues. And generally, we say that the top departments of politics in the UK are the LSE, Oxford, Essex, UCL up and coming fast. And then there's a group probably just behind that that would include Nottingham, Sheffield, Manchester, Warwick, King's, that level. Cambridge doesn't really have a politics department, so you can't really put them in the same category. And why are those, why are they the top departments? They're the top departments, part is critical mass, which means you get a very broad, diverse range of coverage. We're a very large department. We can cover every aspect of the discipline and every area of the world. But the other thing is we hire top faculty, and those faculty publish in top places and teach cutting-edge subjects and engage with policymakers and decision-makers. And there's not that other many departments who I think can sort of go toe-to-toe with us. In our recruitment rounds, we go toe-to-toe with top US universities. This year we hired a young French guy, PhD from Chicago, who had an offer from Stanford. And we went tooth and nail to get him to come. He came here because we managed to work out. His wife is also French. She works in financial services, and so she could get a job in the City of London. We all met Karina Schmidt, a young German woman, PhD from Harvard. She's another hire we made this year. So every year when we do our faculty hires, we're hiring the top people out there. We compete globally for the top faculty. And so there's not that many other...
When you need politics and international relations to be, I guess it's going to be 50-50, right?
Yes.
And then I wonder if you can straight on the UK's relationship with the other countries in Europe or the whole world, or how much so you can straight on the whole world.
Yeah, I mean, we don't think of ourselves as a British Department of Politics. We have one course on British government, in the final year course. We're a global department of politics. We compete globally for students, we compete globally for faculty, we compete globally for research income. We publish in the top global journals, our own research. And we research all elements of politics across the world. And it's the same for the international relations department. So what we do, what you can think of is we study politics as a discipline, and that's wherever that is. So it's not about Britain. It's about the subject of politics and the subject of international relations. So in the international relations department, it'll be the history, some of the theoretical ideas about international relations and how it works. Is it all about states, or is it about economic interests? Is it about and the whole history of the development of international relations? In political science, my course, for example, GB 101, we start off and I show a map of the world and show how different things, different political structures and political outcomes exist in different parts of the world. Why are some countries democratic and others not? Why do some countries have presidential systems and some have parliamentary systems? Why do some have proportional electoral systems and others have majoritarian? Why do some countries redistribute large amounts of income and others don't? Why do some countries have higher growth rates than others? Why do some countries have ethnic conflict and others don't? So why do some countries have more women represented in their parliaments than other parliaments, than other countries do? So that's the sort of bread and butter of GB 101. So we started thinking about why are some countries democratic or not? Is it economics? Is it history? Is it society? Is it institutions? Then we move on to political behaviour, and we look at where political preferences come from. How do we think about them in left-right terms? How do people vote? Do they vote strategically or do they vote expressively? What do parties do? How do parties form? How do they compete? And so it's about generally the subject of politics. And then we move on to institutions and we look at parliamentary, presidential, PR, majoritarian, single party coalition, single party governments, coalition governments, and so on. And then we move to political outcomes and we look at political determinants of economic growth, political determinants of redistribution of wealth and welfare states, gender representation in parliaments, and ethnic conflict. So you get a broad coverage of all the things you will then go on to the second and third year on the course, whether it's going more into greater politics, more into European politics, more into public policy type subjects. You've already got the basics of that. Yeah?
Are there any academic scholarships available in the government department?
Not for our, not specifically. specifically from the department. The school has some that they offer, but they're not sort of department specific. You have to inquire directly to the school about how to go to those. The school has bursaries that they offer. Any final question?
If they say 60 people on the international rating scores and 30 on the government course, would there be any benefit in terms of class sizes or student staff ratio being on a course with less?
No, because the way the LSE works is you will be in classes of 15 or less, regardless of how big the course is. So my first year course is 180 students in my lecture, and then the classes are smaller. And so the way we do it is, our big first year courses are taught by a senior faculty member for the whole lot, and then the classes are taught by postdoctoral fellows. Second year, they're team taught, and final year, they're specialist options. So you will be in a class, it could be a little larger than 15, but it means you're in a class with a faculty member for 2 hours a week, running, you know, discussion, but also doing projects and so on. So it varies a bit, but the size of the course is not the predictor of the size of the class. All right, look, if you have any questions, please email me, s.hipx@lse.ac.uk. And follow me on Twitter. Simon J. Hitch. I now have about 3,000 followers. Not all students. Enjoy your time here at the LSE. Please, take any time.